So welcome to our immune system content video. What I'm going to do today is to take you through what's available in our immune system module and really get you excited about doing it. And if it's open to you already, then just jump right in. And if it's not, do the things beforehand that get you ready to open it up for you. All right, so I'm going to share my screen. And it's, let's see, la la la, is this when it posts attendee Zoom? Maybe, the only one I see. All right, let me pull this over here, and I'm going to go to, it was this one, right? No, it's this one. There we go. All right, I'll move this over here. I will make this a little smaller. And so are you seeing the entirety of this? Yes? Immune system mastery? Yeah? Okay. So immune system, our defense system, and it's something that we can't live without, but sometimes we wish we could just cut it off because you're running around with all kinds of symptoms and it just doesn't feel good, but it's our defense system and it defends us against microbes, against toxins, etc. So I'm going to take you through this module and just share what the resources are and what some of the things to focus on are as you're learning. So we start with our learning objectives, and our learning objectives are a good way to pre-frame. The learning objectives and the pre-test are a good way to pre-frame what to be looking for. And I highly recommend that you take note of these things, you make a copy of it, you really focus on it as you're going through. So we're looking at, you want to be fluent in the anatomy and physiology of the immune system. You want to understand the hormones involved in immune response. And like everything else, there's hormones involved. You want to understand the root cause of diseases of autoimmunity, and there's a lot of them. You want to be able to assess immune system dysfunction and function and be able to help teach people balancing protocols for the various parts and the various dysfunctions that can happen. So we have three parts, how it works, what can go wrong, and then creating a healthy immune system. So in the pretest part, most of these pretests are short. They just cover an overview, but it's a good way, again, for you to pre-frame and go, oh, I don't know the answer to that, but I sure would like to know the answer to that. I'm going to be looking for that. Diet and lifestyle modifications to rebalance include produced by the thymus to encourage lymphocytic production. What is that? Macrophages are made from blood antibody. Food tests have mixed reliability, true or false, types of adaptive immune system. So there's 10 questions, right? So these are all going to give you an idea of what's coming. It's kind of like the foreboding of what's coming. Before we go into the core content, I'm just going to show you some of the advanced stuff. And this one, which we did, was I put some articles that you can go to. And then some books that I thought were good books to be looking at. And then there's a whole bunch of articles on chronic Lyme disease and a whole bunch of things on allergies and gluten. And if you ever go through these things and you find anything that isn't working, let us know. Because what's happening is when we give links to outside things, we don't have control. So what we're learning to do now is when we find a really good PDF and article that we want, we'll download it and give you the link to that on our site where we can control it. So we've had to get rid of some things that people moved, they changed their website, who knows, and they were gone. Then we have a couple of things on immunity in here. We should have yours here too. Do we have that, Madam Lynn Rose? Because you talked about homeopathy and that could be related here as well. Maybe not, maybe. So that we had
Sheila talked about homeoprophylaxis, so.
Yeah, so that's directly related to it. So this was an extra and advanced clinical resources. Mm-hmm. And this is all about using homeopathy to support the immune system. And then we had Dr. Nalini Chilkov, because cancer is one of the biggest immune system gone haywire. And she talked about Chinese medicine and how that influences the immune system. And then we had Dr. Terry Walls talking about autoimmunity and her situation through multiple sclerosis. So we have her there. And then I thought, wasn't there one with, no, something different. And then Tom Moorcroft talking about Lyme disease. That was recently. So all of these things are conditions of an immune system gone wild. We also had one that could be put in here. I thought it would have been, I'm not sure where it ended up, but Dr. Jeff Bland, he had a psychoneuroimmunology kind of a thing. And maybe we can add that here too. So we've got a lot of really good stuff for you to go advanced. So just understand the basics, how it works. What are all the terms, the cytokines and the lymphocytes and what all that stuff means. And then the advanced stuff is going to make a lot more sense to you. Okay, so we're going to go into how it works. And like everything else, we start with the how it works. And for some of you, it's a review because maybe you've been to nursing school or medical school or whatever, and you understand it. For some of you, it's relatively new. But even if it is something, you know, oh, I don't need to find out how the immune system works. I know that. I went to nursing school or medical school or whatever. Why? I recommend you watch it anyway, because people like Allison and Chet have told me, wow, I wish they would have taught us this that way in medical school, because it makes so much sense and it ties it into like the body's ability to heal and our ability to guide people. So that's the immune system and how it works. And, you know, from a slide perspective, this is stuff that I think is super important for you to understand. Some of the pictures are a little advanced and it may take a little while. And I'm going to tell you, I don't have everything memorized in all these, like, what's the name of this step to that step, but I know where to look if I'm like, huh, scratching my head, trying to figure out what's going on with somebody. So, you know, the different pieces of it, how the immune system works, what can go wrong, that's the whole module. And I like this picture because it's basically what the immune system is. It's a shield. And in fact, one of our helpers, workers, team members years ago, when we put together the immune system module for the clients, she decided she wanted to call it shield. So she jerry-rigged the name of it so she could make it say SHIELD. And it was scientific and holistic investigation, i.e. of immune something. I don't even know what it stands for anymore. But she made it say SHIELD. And it's a nice thing, SHIELD, because it is a shield and it's trying to deflect. So it doesn't get into your brain and it doesn't get into your organs. You know, these bacteria, virus, fungus, yeast, molds, those are all, you know, microbes, but also food particles, dirt, parasites, and environmental toxins. All of these are assaulting us, and the immune system is responsible for taking charge. So you'll learn more about that. You'll learn more about oxidative stress and the damage that that does and the progression. And then there's a little assessment, and that will be on your Done For You page where you can use that with people to kind of get a score. How well is their immune system working, but how much oxidative stress is actually on their body right now? And then there's a scoring guide and the components of the immune system, right? The main thing is the immune system's first thing is keep it out, right? When you're trying to protect a home, right? You don't want necessarily them to get in your house and step in a booby trap. You want to keep them from getting in the first place. So that's our immune barriers, the skin, the intestinal lining, the lungs, and the blood-brain barrier. So these are all the other parts of the immune system, right? And we go into this in the module, the antibodies, the white blood cells, bone marrow, spleen, lymphatics, complement system, thymus, and hormones. So it just gives you, I like to start with the big picture, and then I like to go deeper and deeper because it helps you to see where it all fits together. I know when I was learning, a lot of times it was just right into the deep stuff, and you're like, wait, where does this fit in? How does this work? Okay. Not being able to. Okay. Is my Chrome frozen? Let me try this. Nope, nothing's working. Let me see if it works over here. Okay, that works over there. That was an Acrobat file. That must be a Chrome thing. Well, what might happen, let me try to get it back, is, okay, let's see if that works. Let me see if another, yeah, it's Chrome. Oh my. All right, let me, yeah, see it says Chrome not responding. I may have to exit and then we'll come back in. There's something wrong with my Chrome on my computer. Okay, let's see if I can get rid of it or at least get it to work. It's not responding. Close the program. Open the program. Let me pause the recording. Somebody remind me to start the recording again when I get this back. Screen share has stopped. Okay. Let me just do this. Sorry about that, guys. Pause recording. So I'll just. So the immune system, you know, it's got, the barriers are the most important thing, like the fence around the estate rather than the booby trap after they walk into the front door, right? You'd rather them not come in than come in and then you have to deal with the debris when the booby trap goes off. And that's the same thing in our immune system, right? As long as we can keep those microbes or those toxins out, we don't have a mess to clean up. If they get in, then we have, you know, all these antibodies going after them and the liver working at it. And we have, you know, this aftermath. So we want to keep them out. So skin, intestinal lining, lungs, blood-brain barrier. That's what supports us. So then we go through the terms. I'm not going to go through all this in detail. Watch the video because there's a lot of video in here. But, you know, knowing these is going to help you to be able to read a CBC, a blood test that somebody has, right? And why these are actually what they mean. And some of you who maybe have watched me reading a blood test, you go, wait a minute, how did she know that? Well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, I know what each of these means. I know the approximate percentages. Do I have them memorized exactly? Maybe by now I do in most of these, but like I know, okay, oh my gosh, they have the basophils elevated. And that probably they have an allergy of some sort or some kind of parasite that's producing histamine type reactions. And especially if it's up at 8, right? And I'm giving you here the ideal ranges. So those are things to know. So I'm really going to have you focus on that. Now this piece, if you don't have this memorized, no big deal, but I'm showing you like what happens. The blood stem cells, they start out in the bone marrow. They're the stem cells of the originals. And these days we hear a lot about stem cells, right? And what does that mean? Well, these are the origins of these particular mature mature cells, and that's the progress that they make. And you'll learn more about that as you listen in. And then hormones and hormone-like chemicals that are related to the immune system. So cytokines. You hear me talk a lot about cytokines when I'm talking about thyroid function and thyroid receptors and how cytokines damage thyroid receptors. So somebody may have an apparent thyroid problem, but really it's an immune system problem because they've got inflammation and they've got cytokines, so inflammatory markers. And what's the difference between that and lymphokines and thymusin, which is a hormone that's produced to encourage the lymphocyte production, and interleukins, and you can actually test interleukins and steroids and corticosteroids. So all of this stuff and how does it affect the immune system, and things like cortisol when we're under stress actually suppresses the immune system. So we talk about that in an overview and then we go into them in detail. Macrophages. When my son was 3, we were talking about something, and I don't know why I talked to him about this, about his immune system. And I started telling him about immune system. I think it's because dad had a cold or something. And I told him about macrophages. I said, oh, they're like little things and they go gobble up when you're sick and we need it. Oh, I know what it was. And sugar kills off these macrophages. And when you have sugar and you're sick, or even if you're not sick, it makes you so your body can't fight this. So I talked to him about macrophages. He's 3 years old. And we were on a vacation and dad wasn't with us. Dad was flying in and he got there and he was miserable. He had had a cold, but now he had a flu and he had a fever and all this stuff. And my husband comes to me and he says, I said, here's some vitamin C and this and that. He goes, Eric says I need macrophages. Do you have some of those? Do you have a bottle of those? And I'm like, okay, Eric remembered, right, from our conversation that dad needs some macrophages right now, big time. But I didn't have any in a bottle, unfortunately, right? So what are they? How are they made? How do they work? You know, we think of them as Pac-Man. It's more complicated like that with their little feelers and their phagosomes. Learn about that. It's a really good thing to learn about. And then you can teach your kids. And this is another picture of stem cell to blood cell. I liked this picture. And then what are antigens, right? We think about antigens and you know, what's the difference and what's a haptin and an immunogen? It's not just antigens. Like, so I want you to know a little bit more. Are you going to remember it in all detail? No. Are you going to be asked to memorize it? No. Maybe on the test, you might have to spit it back. So you'll have to go back and review your notes if you don't remember. But we're going to go into that. And what are these antibodies and how do they work? And why are there different types, right? The IgMs and Ds, they're the first line. So if you're looking at somebody and they have an IgM, which is related to monocytes on the lab test, you go monocytes, that's the first line of defense, right? Or most prevalent is IgG and IgA, the mucosa. And we see that measurement in stool tests. When we go through stool tests, we see the IgM, the IgA measurement, the secretory IgA, meaning that mucosal surface is producing these antibodies to try to protect that mucosal surface. And one of the things I really like is a stool test for gluten intolerance, because a lot of people will say, oh, just do the blood test. And well, in order to get it showing in the blood, circulating in the blood, it has to have a recent exposure. Whereas the IgAs, they're like those little soldiers. They're sitting there, they're not hurting you now. But wait, you throw something in its path that it's recognizing, boom, you have a reaction. So I like personally, if we're gonna do gluten testing, I like to do like Intero Labs IgA, and we have that in a further, and I think in the assessments piece of this section. And IgE, that first line of defense. So if somebody says, oh my gosh, I have hives every time I'm exposed to ragweed, or if I eat strawberries, I break out in hives, that's an IgE type of a reaction, an immediate defense, immediate. Then we go into all this other stuff, which we won't go into right now. You don't have to memorize it, but it's nice to know, right? What are these types of cells that are helping us to support the immune system in different parts of the body? Then we talk about the types of immune system, the innate and the adaptive, right? The adaptive is basically when they remember you, like they're exposed, that part's exposed to a particular set of antigens and it remembers it for next time. Where the innate is just those barriers and the macrophages, oh, there's not something there, but it's not specific and adapted to the specific type of response. And we talk about that. What are the different types of lymphocytes and where do they come from? The T cells from the thymus and the B cells from the bone marrow. And what does that mean? And so then when you hear people talking about AIDS or other things and they're talking T cells, right? I want you to understand what that means, right? And how do we help that? Dendritic cells, like the dendrites, are these long pieces that pop out like the finger-like projections, and antigen-presenting cells, they grab something, they go, this doesn't look right, and they present it to the T cells, and the T cells go, oh yeah, I gotta remember this one, and the B cells are the memories, it gives it to the B cells, and the B cells rememorize it. So this is all the stuff you'll learn in here. I'm just giving you an overview. I wanna get you excited about this, because I think it's exciting when you understand how all this stuff works and how it fits together. Am I right? Yes? Yes? Okay, cool. I hope you get as excited as I do. And then we talk about, because you're going to hear this a lot in the news because of AIDS, right? And you want to know what is T helper cells versus T suppressor cells versus the ones that modify and actually kill, right? The killers, right? So we talk about that, and there's different kinds of T helpers. You might have heard this in regard to autoimmunity. I know that Datish Karazian talks about this a lot, the Th1 versus Th2. What does that really mean, right? And in terms of that, and you can, these are things you can measure, but we hardly ever do, unless it's a really strange case. There's a simplification of T helpers, how they work, the complexities of it, major histocompatibility complex and leukocyte HLAs, you know, there's a lot of genetics related to this. And when you look at the genetics test, you're going to see a lot of different genetic SNPs related to the HLAs. So that's something that's, it's good to understand. How do we know this? And how does this affect, how does the genetics affect your immune system? Why are some people more prone to allergies and others not? And it has to do with a lot of this, the histocompatibility. How does it work when we attack? Like, this is the sequence, right? invader comes in and the macrophages engulf it. They give it to the antigen presenting cell, puts an antenna, and the actual, why is vitamin D important for the immune system? It's one of these pieces. It's a part of the antenna. Like, ooh, let's find T helper cells to help us get rid of this thing, right? T helper type 1, bring the killer cells in, the natural killer cells and the cytotoxic, destroy it. And then the T regulatories make sure that there's a balance between the helpers and suppressors. Too many helpers and not enough suppressors, and we're gonna get an overreaction, right? It's, we need to calm it down. And the T helpers type 2, then they go, hey, B cells, you see this guy? He's ugly. We got him. But if he ever comes back, we want you to get him first, right? And then it goes to the memory cells, and now we have that remembrance. And so when the next time, so say it's measles, right? You have the measles, and now you have these B cells that have created that, the body remembers that. And it goes, oh, wait, that's measles, kill it, done. It recognizes it. It doesn't have to go through that delayed process. And so when you're explaining to people, you know, this is what the concept of immunizations, which we know there's a lot of good sense to it, but the way it's implemented, it's like we're bypassing our body's immediate ability. Like if something's super, super, super virulent, and there's somebody who's super like weakened, that there might be, in theory, a reason for helping them. But I don't think we've gotten it yet. I don't think we've figured it out yet. We're just poisoning people with these immunizations, but that's the concept behind it. How the immune system works and why it works. Mast cells, right? These mast cells are on all of our stuff. And this is why fatty acids are so important. The arachidonic acid cascade. Do we have a balance between omega-3 and omega-6? And do we have these cells that are just firing off at will? You know, there's some grass, let me fire off. Or is it firing off when there really is a reason for it? And then you look at the cascade. This is how inflammation is produced within those mast cell membranes, right? And there's a histamine reaction in the mast cell membrane. How it's affected by drugs. And I really want you to make sure you study this. You got this same chart in the fatty acids thing. So if you missed it then, you'll have another chance to revisit it. But, you know, where do drugs actually come in to help reduce inflammation? And yeah, they help to decrease the production of the arachidonic acid, which is the inflammatory, by stopping this over here. But on the other hand, it also stops that conversion because it's the same enzyme, delta 6 desaturase, that converts your short chain omega-3s to your long chain. And those are your firefighters. Those are the ones that are trying to help you. So when we take NSAIDs and steroids, yeah, we decrease inflammation, but we also kill our own body's ability to do it. I say, you know, do you want to kill the firefighters or do you want to be able to put out the fire without killing the firefighters? You know, when I explain that to people in that way, they go, well, I don't want to kill my firefighters. What do I do instead? Well, what you do instead is this chart. And you can use these charts with people. Print them out, put them in a little like a sleeve, right? And when you're explaining things to people, or if you're doing things online, have these available when you're explaining to people, this is why I want you to take these nutrients or eat these nutrient dense foods. Because instead, we can actually increase this conversion, right? And we can have enough of this EPA, DHA will give us enough of this prostaglandin to displace the arachidonic acid, which leads down to the fires down here. So instead we fortify the firefighters, and with the right nutrients, we decrease this. So the red means it decreases the production of the leukotrienes and the thromboxanes, which are very inflammatory. So I'm giving you an overview of it, and you may be going, okay, she's losing me, but it'll make sense as you go through this and listen to it at your own pace and slow it down. I'm here right now. My goal is to get you to see what density of information is in this module and how you can actually use it to explain things to people. You've got some great stuff in here, great teaching tools with these pictures, right? The one with the shield to show them what's there. And you've got this one with the how the body works. That picture I showed to so many people when I was doing my in-person practice. I'd sit here, and I actually had a friend of mine who was helping me out, and she would sit downstairs and, you know, to collect payments from people and let the next person in. And she said to me, you got to record that presentation about the fats. She says, I've heard it so many times that I could do it for you. That's how, don't you get tired of saying that? I said, yeah, I kind of get tired of saying it. Now we have it online. We have it in the ERC program in our inflammation section, and we've shared it in a lot of places. But you're going to see that you make your own version of it after you've seen enough patients and you've explained it enough. But highly recommend that you explain it over and over and over again till you can do it in your sleep, because it makes such a huge difference that people go, oh, now I know why. Right? This shows you the link here between vitamin C and the immune system, right? The sun and the production and where it actually comes in to play. And here's all the effects it has. There's receptors for vitamin D on B and T cells. So if we don't have enough D, then those B and T cells aren't going to work as well, right? Some of them can actually help in the conversion. It has to do with the phagocytes, which are phagocytes are a type of macrophage. And then the blocking and the arming of those killer T cells. So all of these ways that vitamin D affects the immune system. So when we talk to people about getting their vitamin D levels up, because most people are low, you explain to them why it's important. This also explains why there have been studies that show when we have an outbreak, like this stuff with fear about a specific virus that may be going around, make sure your vitamin D levels are up. Make sure your clients get their vitamin D levels tested and bring it up. And you can actually take huge doses of D for a few days to shore it up and then go back to normal doses. So some studies showed, like, it was something, some percentage of your weight, and I don't remember exactly what the percent, like 90% of your weight in vitamin D for 3 or 4 days. So I calculated that's about 100 IUs. So I tell people 100 IUs, but in reality, if they weigh 200 pounds, it's closer to, 180 IUs that they need, but only for 3 or 4 days. And it really shores all this stuff up and can help knock out these viruses and support your immune system, because look at what all the things it's doing and all the places it's coming in. Vitamin A is very important too, because that affects those mucous membranes, those IgAs. So if you were to do vitamin A, D, and C, and you can get somebody who's scared about getting the flu, and should I get the flu shot? And if you look, just start before the flu season starts, shore it up. If you start to get the sniffles, then you can go in and have these high doses and then go back down to maintenance doses. That's going to support so well. I had somebody who was suffering with this really bad cold flu type of thing for quite a number of years. God, I can't get rid of it. And I told her to take 100 IUs of vitamin D for 3 days, up her vitamin C to balance tolerance, and then do, I think I told you the same thing, 100 IUs of vitamin A, 3 days. And like, boom, within 2 days, she was fine. So it works. It really does work, because it's helping the body to actually handle it, not suppressing the symptoms. They take an antihistamine. What is it doing? It's suppressing the histamine production, which means those little bad guys just keep running around and there's nobody there to gobble them up. So it's really super important. Be careful when you ask somebody to take a lot of A or D, because it can be liver toxic if it's too long. And I learned this the hard way when I was first in practice, and I had somebody and I said to her, look, I gave her a bottle of the little vitamin A drops. And I said, I want you to take 10 drops a day. Cause each drop was no 20 drops a day. So each drop was 5,000. And I said, take 20 of these a day. And she came back like 2 days later. She goes, I don't have enough to finish. And I'm like, what do you mean? You finished that bottle already? Yeah, 20 dropperfuls a day. And she took 20 dropperfuls a day, which was a million IUs a day. And I said, stop, don't. So write things down for people so they're really, really clear. Drops versus dropperfuls. Okay, then we go through immune system and vitamin D, and there's some references, vitamin C, and there's some references and how it works in the phagocytes, the cytokines, the lymphocytes. And the zinc, we hear about zinc all the time. Zinc undernutrition or deficiency has shown to impair cellular mediators of innate immunity, phagocytosis, natural killer cells, and the oxidative burst. And this is something that you can look at, but here's the deal, right? So you got somebody who's like starting to get the sniffles and they don't want to get sick, or everybody around them in their house is sick and they don't want to get sick. Get them on a regime of A, C, D, and zinc minimally. And probiotics helps, and other things help as well. So, and we'll go through more of that in the thing. So here's the thing. I'm teaching you the depth of why this works and how it works. And you are naturally coming up with, oh, the support. How do I support people based on knowing how it works? As opposed to just, I read in this book that if you take this much of this and this much of that, there it helps, right? When you understand why, there you go. So there's an in-depth article there. Hopefully it still works. If not, let me see. If not, we'll, yeah. So we're going to go through the site and really pull out any of the PDFs that we really like in there and just download them and put them. Yep, it's there. Yay. It's a 17-page paper for those of you who really want to go in deep. Whoops. Where'd it go? Oh, it opened it in the same window. There we go. All right. So that's the first mod. That's just the very first part. And it's almost an hour long. So you might want to do it in sections, you know, when we go through again and we revamp the site, you know, over the next year or two, we'll be pulling things out and making shorter videos so you can just watch and then really sink in and then watch another. But in the meantime, you're good. There's a quiz at the end of that piece. We try to do that just to keep you guys from having to, you know, just build it all up. I always liked that in school. Some people didn't, but when they gave quizzes instead of just the final, then I knew where I was at throughout and that forced me to study along the way. And that's why we did this. It's just to help you and to guide you. Okay, so what can go wrong with the immune system? Even just going through the how it works, you've got some sense of what can go wrong. And this one is this as long? It's probably as long. This is a half hour, so it's not quite as long. And we've got some stuff about autoimmune testing here. We've got these charts, elimination and provocation protocol charts for you. And then we have a quiz. So let's look at the slides. And what can go wrong with the immune system? So we talk about it can get underactive or overactive. That's pretty much it, right? It either overacts, it underacts and then you get infections and immune suppression, or it's overacting and it's autoimmune and allergies. Now, overacting is a little bit kind of a rough sense of what it is. It's dysfunctional when there's autoimmunity, but usually it's overacting because it's acting to things. So what can go wrong is the weakening of those immune barriers, the gut, the brain, the skin, the lungs, and there are some of the things that can cause it, right? We already talked about vitamin D, and it was really clear that vitamin D deficiency is part of it, blood sugar irregularities, overactive adrenal, poor diet. And these are all segments that precede this module in the program so that you understand, well, you know, you're helping people's immune system when you help them get their blood sugar under control, right? When you get their immune system under control, overactive adrenal, too much cortisol. Cortisol suppresses the immune system. The diet, you've got lots of stuff leading up to this on diet, very important, and candida, gut infections, right? In the digestion section, stress. But prenatal environment, super important. You know, when people have intolerances, like they're being fed cow's milk when they're babies, or mom is eating her own allergens and passing these things on, those kids have a statistically significant increase in the rate of autism, asthma, and eczema. So this is really important that we catch people, the moms, and that we ask questions, right? A lot of people don't even ask questions about what was that prenatal environment and what was mom eating when you were a baby? Were you breastfed? Those are important questions, and that's why I have them on the history forms. So on a cellular level, not enough vitamin D prevents the T cell activation, not enough of the suppressors causes damage to innocent bystanders. The suppressors are supposed to calm things down once they start going. And when I say innocent bystanders, like say the immune system starts to attack a virus, a toxin or something in the area, and it just keeps throwing bullets at that area, what other tissue is in the way? But if the suppressor cells come in time, it just gets rid of that thing and goes away. But if not, it can hit the thyroid or the pancreas or whatever. So it's a complex situation, and we're learning more and more and more about how it works. Too much natural killer, too many antibodies, parasites and food allergies increase interleukin 4, which causes the overproduction of antibodies, cross-reactivity. So say, here's the interesting thing that I go into in this. is that the way that the immune system recognizes a protein, because it attacks proteins, a foreign protein, is it's just looking at either end of that protein chain at the three amino acids on either end. That's it. That's what it's looking, going, oh, I recognize you. So it's easy if there's a lot of that going on, and say there's an antibody that is against ragweed or broccoli or milk or gluten, and it's in the bloodstream, and the thyroid has the same, or piece of the thyroid or piece of the stomach or a piece of any other part has a similar amino acid structure on either end, it'll get attacked. So this is where we have to learn to get the body regulated. It's very interesting. So autoantibodies, you can have lots more. Cyrex Labs has a test, Array 5, which tests for about 36 different autoantibodies in one test. So all of these different areas can have antibodies against them, which means that a person is getting attacked in these areas, they're going to develop symptoms. And here's the thing that we need to keep in mind. We want to help people get in balance before they have the symptoms. Because you can have symptoms, you can have antibodies happening that are just eating away at your thyroid or eating away at this tissue. And you don't have symptoms until there's a threshold that gets crossed, right? And then you start to get symptoms. So I have tested a lot of folks. I just test pretty much everybody for thyroid antibodies because they're so common. And if they have thyroid antibodies and they have other symptoms related to other organ systems, I suspect that they may have other autoimmunities. And we work on the immune system. We don't work on giving them thyroid hormone. Yeah, we help them with that, you know, with herbs that help support the thyroid, or, you know, supporting them if they're already on thyroid medication. But it's more than that. It's a matter of balancing the immune system so the body stops attacking itself. And if you can work with somebody who has a known thyroid condition, they say, I have Hashimoto's, I've had that tested, and they have other symptoms in other areas, and you start working on the protocols for helping people with autoimmunity, you're going to help all those areas, right? You're going to help all those areas. So we have to see a problem for what it is, for what the root cause is. So there, the pancreas, it's type 1 diabetes, the intestines and Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, the brain, multiple sclerosis is where the myelin sheaths get attacked, the cerebellum and the Purkinje cells, these are all parts of it. Connective tissue, right? The joints, a lot of people have connective tissue diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, Sjogren's connects the tissues and the glands that produce moisture. So in the eyes and the mouth. So all of these things can be affected, and you'll learn all about this in this module. And why you're at risk? Who's at risk for autoimmune disease? Well, the dietary proteins, eating foods that are not congruent with their physiology, eating things like gluten, which damages the lining, these get into the bloodstream. Sometimes we have that happening over years and years and people aren't aware, and then suddenly they're diagnosed with an autoimmune condition. How about if you can help them with this before the damage gets done? And you can. So we talk about the recipe for autoimmune disease. You know, there's usually, it's a three-legged stool, the genes, there's certain HLA, you know, DQs and DQRs and other genes that predispose somebody to have more of an autoimmune disease. And then there's this immune dysregulation, right? Vitamin D deficiency, leaky gut, other things that cause the immune system to be dysregulated. And then there's environmental toxins, you know, the deficiencies of nutrients and all that stuff. And when you put the three together, the autoimmune disease will form. You can have somebody who's exposed to some of these things, but they don't actually have the genetics, and they may get away with not developing an immune system response. And the other hand, they may have all the genes, but never develop an autoimmune disease, because they have these other things in balance. And I think I've been very fortunate because I do have some of those autoimmune genes, and I've been very careful for the last 30 something years. And, you know, I have family members who have autoimmune diseases, right? And I don't. And, you know, I attribute that to the epigenetic factors that I've chosen, so that I only have one leg of that stool, the genetics. I don't have, well, environment we all have, right? We're all exposed to toxins in the environment, but I control that by controlling what's inside my house and all, and then the food as much as I can. And we talk about regulatory genes, and, you know, this is a complex one. We'll go into that in there. common autoimmune diseases. Here's, you've heard of all of these, right? Maybe not Sjogren's, not everybody's heard about Sjogren's. Actually Sjogren's, Sjogren's is the secretion. So they have dry eyes, dry mouth, dry skin. And I was thinking the other one is scleroderma, where everything's tightened. So that's a connective tissue autoimmune disease. Multiple sclerosis, celiac, and Hashimoto's type 1 diabetes are probably the most commonly heard of. Crohn's and ulcerative colitis are getting pretty much there. I have a sister who has ulcerative colitis. And so immune disorders and T helper. So I want to just say, you know, medical doctors will say, because that's what they're taught in school, that autoimmune diseases aren't curable. And I'm not saying that you should tell people that they're curable, but you can get an autoimmune disease under control. I would say to him, I'd tell him stuff and he'd say, no, that's not true. I'm like, okay, so tell that to my person who had Hashimoto's, diagnosed with antibodies up in the thousands, and now she doesn't have antibodies and she doesn't have symptoms. And she's, 70 years old. Tell me what that means. What do you want to call it? Because I'll call it that. If you don't want to call it a cure, then I won't call it a cure. You don't want to call it remission? I won't call it. Well, it's remission. Okay, great. Whatever you want to call it. But it really is, we can help people get these things under control. It's about working with them to find out all those stressors that are contributing and then helping them to, put a lid on it. So this is about the T helpers and the T suppressors. And these are not absolute, but this is mapped out in a lot of places that in general, an overactivity of T helper 1 causes Hashimoto's, diabetes, MS, and chronic viral infections. As we were talking, EBV and cytomegalovirus and maybe hepatitis type C. Helper type 2 is more antibodies, lupus, dermatitis, dermatomyositis, asthma, multiple chemical sensitivities. These are all part of possibly a pattern, but it's not absolute. There are people with Hashimoto's who may also have, they may have both a T helper 1 and 2. They may have just a T helper 2, right? So TH1 or TH2. So it's not absolute. One of the ways, and I think I mentioned it in there, but Dr. Karazian talks about is there's a list of, and it's probably in here, a list of nutrients that help support the body in increasing TH1 or TH2. And if you have somebody and you're not sure which it is, you can give them like for 5 days, some of these nutrients that that are supposed to increase TH1. If they get worse rather than better, that they have a TH1 dominance and you want to stay away from the things that support TH1 and give them the things that support TH2 and vice versa. Things like probiotics are just, they're almost like adaptogenic for this. Then there's ways to test, right? So testing the immune globulins, specific antibodies that you can test for all these different areas. And I think intrinsic factor antibody is not something that's tested very often, but I think it happens a lot. We see a lot of B12 deficiency. That's intrinsic factor gets produced in the stomach to help carry B12 and get it absorbed. And we see a lot of B12 deficiency, even in people who are taking a lot of B12 or eating a lot of meat and dairy and whatever. And I think that these people end up with intrinsic factor, especially if they're eating the standard American diet where they've got a lot of dairy and gluten, which can create an autoimmune response. So it's not, you can't just say, oh, they have a B12 deficiency because they don't eat enough B12. It could be intrinsic factor. And as people get older, generally intrinsic factor goes down. But I'm very suspicious of people who are taking a lot of B12, eating a lot of B12 rich foods, even if they do have the genes for it. Because I have the genes that would predispose me to a B12 deficiency, and I'm plant-based for 35 years, and I don't have a B12 deficiency. I've tested my MMA over and over again, and it's fine, right? Yeah, I take it, but I take it every now and then, right? So I think that we just need to, it's about going deeper. There's an advanced immune panel. I have run these so few times, but it's nice for you to know what they are, and it's available if you need to dig deeper with someone, or if they've been to a rheumatologist or, someone, an immunologist, and they've gotten these tests that you know what they are, you can always look them up. There's the T helper 1s and 2s and which interleukins are associated. 90% of Hashimoto's is TH1 dominant, but you never know when you're going to get that somebody in that other 10%, and you have to know how to look for it. And so if you were testing, to see if they have a T helper imbalance. These are the things you'd test. For a T helper one, you'd test interleukin 2, interleukin 12, tumor necrosis factor alpha, and interferon. And then for two, IL-4, 13, and 10. Food allergies, we see that more than anything. We're versed in this a lot, right? We're taking people through a allergy elimination provocation in one of our groups right now. So you can have immediate or delayed. My husband has an immediate hypersensitivity to soybeans. He can sniff soybean flour and he gets an immediate reaction. His throat starts to close. His gut starts to feel it, but his lungs start to close as well. So immediate or delayed. And those are the ones that people go poo-poo about, like, what do you mean you're allergic to, you know, sesame seeds? Well, it doesn't have an immediate response. You know, it doesn't have that. It has like an IgG response days later. So there's just an art to guiding people through provocation and elimination. And we give you all the tools you need, all the charts you need, and you'll see it when we go back to the page. Okay, IgM is early in the immune response. So, you know, we see that happening. Food sensitivities, and I would say frequently caused by leaky gut, almost exclusively caused by leaky gut is what I've found. Lab tests for food reactivities, and we go through this in the assessments modules, but you can test for inhalant allergies and you can do skin tests. And that's the old fashioned way. People do that. Like, oh, let's see. And oh, you're not allergic to milk. Look, it didn't show up on your skin. Well, they don't have an IgE reaction. They may have an IgG reaction, right? Whereas the stuff that will show up on a skin test, most people already know that they're sensitive to ragweed, grass, et cetera. It's like, why put them through that hell? But we don't see that. So food intolerance tests, again, I'm not a big fan of any of these tests. Actually, the one that I'm most like is the stool antibody tests, because I know that the person's been away from that food and then they have it, the IgAs in the stool that are lining the gut are going to go, ooh, right? They're going to be there. They're just waiting. Whereas in the blood, they go down. I mean, the half-life is like 4 days, so they go down a lot after 4 days. But after a month of being off of food, you're going to see minimal, if any. Sometimes they're there, but a lot of times not. And if you go to do like the Cyrex allergy test, they want you to eat the foods you suspect you're allergic to for a month before you do the test. Like, seriously, I'm not telling somebody who got off of gluten because it gave them hives or joint pain or made them spacey to go back on gluten so I could test if they're allergic to gluten, right? I don't want to do that. So I've had really good results just doing the stool test, done it on a lot of people. And the only reason I actually test for those things is to get people off of the things I suspect. And I do the food intolerance test after we've done elimination diets and we get their diet all cleaned up and like, there's still something there. Like, what is it? What is it that caused that? And then we test it. But here's the thing. When people react to a certain food, it may not be an allergy. They may be sensitive to that particular food. Maybe they are sensitive to sesame seeds, but it's not an allergy response, so it wouldn't be picked up here. And that's where it gets picked up when you do your elimination provocation. Maybe it's a histamine response. Maybe it's a oxalate response. Maybe it's related to the amines in there. So there's a lot of reasons. And if you haven't done, you're going to enjoy doing the module. I think it's right now module 11, but it's our food principles module. And we go through every one of those special diets and how does it present so that you can help people figure out if they have sensitivities to it. The thing you don't want to do is make people crazy. And that's what happens with people because they watch this summit and this recording and they read this book and suddenly they want to get off of histamine foods, oxalate foods, lectin-containing foods, amine-containing foods. And the next thing you know, there's nothing left that they can eat. And they've got winter squash on their plate. That's it. Like, right? And then they find out the winter squash raises their blood sugar and they can't even eat that. So we can't make people crazy, right? We just want to use our best judgment, and that's why we study this. Use our best judgment to pull people off of the things that we suspect and off of the things that they've seen. And that's why I love the elimination provocation. It's a slower process, but boy, it can make a difference. An elimination diet, You want to remove them for at least 4 days. Some of them you have to go longer. You can either have them do a fast, put them on medical food, you know, just like a protein powder kind of thing. I used to use Thorne's MediClear a lot because it's the cleanest of those medical foods. It doesn't have sugars in it and doesn't have anything that I opposed to, or the rare foods diet, which is what we're guiding people to now. We have them fill out a food frequency and you have access to that and find out what are the foods that they hardly ever eat. What are the foods they eat less than once a month or never? And then they, for 4 days, that's what they eat. Because if they never eat it, chances of it hurting them are slim to none, right? Except if it's a food that's in a similar family to something else and it's not really an allergy, maybe it's a particular chemical component. So we get, you know, we do still get people having symptoms, but what we find is like, wow, you know, after 3 days on this rare foods diet, everything's settling down. I'm feeling so much better. And then you do the provocation, a new food at a time. I have the 3-day rule. We explain it all in there, right? You add it every day for 3 days. If you're suspicious, monitor it carefully. If it causes a reaction, you don't eat it anymore. And you wait until the symptoms subside and test something else. It's slow, right? But you have all the materials to guide you through this. Blood antibody food tests, you know, like I said, some of them are IgG, which is the delayed hypersensitivity. Some are IgG and IgE, and some lab also offer IgM and A. Those are the expensive ones, but it gives you a realm of what all the different antibodies are. Mixed reliability, and there's a lot of large number of positives related to leaky gut. So if you were to do this test and you go, oh, look at all these foods you're allergic to, and you take them off of that and they start eating more and more of the foods they weren't allergic to, and you don't work with them on fixing their leaky gut, guess what? Those foods they weren't allergic to, they now are, because it's the frequency of eating it, it gets it into the bloodstream, and now they develop some new allergies. So it's just, it's a tricky process. It's not just a matter of run a lab, take them off the foods, go back and test them again in a few months. So you got to work on the gut. You've got to work on the immune system. We give you all the tools you need for that. Okay, so blood testing of the immune system, your CBC, go back and review the stuff in the module on blood testing, the white blood cells and the differential. Some of the labs, Canada is one of the places that doesn't always do it. The Canadian docs, they don't do the differential, meaning they will just do the white blood cells and the red blood cells. They won't tell you how many lymphocytes, how many neutrophils, how many monocytes. Some of the labs will do them and they don't give you a percentage, they give you an absolute. It's like, come on, you're a computer. You're generating a computerized report. Don't make me do the math. In that case, you're gonna get a number that might look like white blood cell count is 5.7. And then of course they show the other differentials in this, and these numbers that are a different scale. So that 5.7 means 5.7, I forget the exact scale, whether it's million or whatever. Then they show you these other numbers and it's confusing. So you have to like look at those numbers and go, okay, 5.7 is the total number of white blood cells. The ones that are lymphocytes are, let's say, 2.3. So what percentage of 5.7 is 2.3? And then you calculate, and what percentage is, and all those should add up to 100. And then we have ranges, which I showed you earlier, you know, like say lymphocytes should be between 20 and 40 and neutrophils should be 40 and 60. And so you, on the labs that don't actually just take a second, how long does it take to program a computer to do that? Cindy will know that well, because she works with computers. Simple, why do I have to do it? You might want to create if you are in a place where that's what you're getting a lot of, just create a little Excel spreadsheet and have it calculate for you. So you just put your numbers in and it calculates for you. But anyway, we want the differential, that's important. And we want to be looking at the percentages, not the absolutes, okay? The other things that are very important for testing the immune system, the insulin levels, because high insulin levels disrupt the immune system. I love the blood spot fatty acid test and the AAEPA ratio. I use the one from Genova, but there's other places that do it. I love looking at the triglyceride HDL ratio. C-reactive protein is an inflammatory marker. And then if need be, we look at cytokines and interleukins and sed rate. C-reactive protein doesn't always get elevated in immune responses, which is kind of interesting. I've seen people with overt, they have antibodies to their particular part of their body. They do have an immune autoimmune, but their C-reactive protein isn't elevated. So you can't use anything as an absolute. We have a whole module on the blood spot fatty acid test. Okay, so optimal ratios between 1.5 and 3 on some tests, maybe up to 5, the ratio between arachidonic acid and EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid. It's considered unwell to have a ratio above 10. And a person I looked at earlier today, she had a 12 when we first tested her in 2018. And then it had gone down. No, that was 19. She had a 12. And then a year later now she has a 5. She's doing really well with that, right? Her ratio has gotten better. She's not as inflamed. We see in people with MS and other autoimmune diseases, we often see that number over 20. And in depression, we see it over 20. So it's really important to work with people on the dietary regime of getting their fats. Above 15 means a high level of inflammation. And the average American is estimated to be about 11. So the average American is pretty inflamed, okay? So that's what you got there. What can go wrong? You have a little test. I gave you the Cyrex immune testing PDF, which has some really good stuff in it. Hopefully it's still, yes, it's still there, good. And it tells you all about, you know, the autoimmunity and all that, but then it gives you the lists of all of the, it's a really good book they put together. So it gives you the list of all the things they test for and what area of the body. So what are the parietal cells? What does that test for? Intrinsic factor, et cetera, et cetera. So those are all the antibodies that you can test with them. And elimination and provocation protocols. I give you the charts and stuff that I've put together. Feel free to take them and, you know, whoa. Okay, let me write that down. We missed that one. Provocation and elimination. I know where those are. So it looks like it's going to our old site. Okay, elimination, provocation. And that's it. Any questions so far before I jump into creating a healthy immune system? Anybody have questions or comments so far? No? Yes? Okay. If not, we'll wait till the end and then we can address questions. So now it's creating a healthy system. What do we do to balance this? How long is this one?
Hello.
This one's about 40 minutes long. All right, so let's look. And this is heavy duty stuff, right? So it's maybe 40 minutes, but I don't recommend you listen to it at double speed. I already talk fast enough, so you might want to listen to it at 0.75 speed if there's an option to download it and then put it in a player that does that. But there's a lot here, right? And before you jump into this last piece, really make sure that you understand, not that you have memorized every little name of every little thing, but that you understand the process. And then this is going to make sense. So first thing in balancing the immune system is always reduce the toxic load. And these are things that we may be doing anyway with people before we even decide that they have or determine that they have an immune system risk problem, right? The exercise, reduce stress, balance adrenals, blood sugar, reduce the antigenic load, get them on a elimination of just those six, you know, gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts, get them off sugar, help them clean up their environment. So all of this stuff is going to help them, and repairing leaky gut. By the time you do all this, somebody who had an autoimmune disease may no longer have an autoimmune disease. Does that make sense? Right? So a lot of this stuff is very, you know, it's almost generic, but it's important. It's the ones that are a challenge are the people who are doing all of that. And we're trying to figure out why do they still have a problem. So these are the things that slow down. You've seen this before. All these allergens and sugar and all that slow down or damage the immune system. So we go through and we test the immune system. We look at questionnaires, we interview them, we ask them lots of questions, environmental exposure, mold exposure, EMF exposure, stress in the household, fear, right? Some people grew up and some people have messed up immune systems because mom was stressed out when she was pregnant. Or their first 3 years of life, they had a really traumatic experience and that can affect their immune system up until they show up in your office when they're age 50, right? You do the routine blood testing, you'll be able to see from the CBC and the blood chemistry, and we go through this in detail in the assessments piece, which of those markers can indicate, other than the CBC, which is really clear, the white blood cell counts, what is actually going on for them. So we want to assess. And then if need be, we have specialized blood testing, but we don't have to do this very often. Some of them might come in with this because they've been to an immunologist or a rheumatologist. And so then you, if you don't remember, you just pull out a book and you read on it, right? You have a good, and I have a list of books in here that, you know, everybody should have, or actually in the testing module that you should have. Food testing, gluten sensitivity, fatty acid testing. So what's step two? Well, we want to go in and balance their immune barrier, right? So replenishing vitamin D, always testing for vitamin D and then replenishing it. People who live in Canada generally don't get enough from sunlight because most of the year living in that northern climate, they're not exposed. Plus you're in these buildings all the time, right? A lot of us, even in southern climates, don't get enough exposure to sunlight. And then looking at antioxidant levels, glutathione, superoxide dismutase, catalase, I've found that, you know, you can actually support people really well with topical formulations that contain those because they don't get absorbed real well orally, or you give them precursors of these. These are the dominant, the main antioxidants that are supported. So we tell you a little bit about one of those things, some of those things. Balancing the immune system, step three, is looking at the T1 and TLPR1 and TLPR2 if need be. Don't always have to go there, right? And that's, you know, the stuff we talked about before. And this is a good chart for you to have. You can print it out. So if you're suspecting that they have, if they have an autoimmune disease and you're not sure what to give them, you do a test. So if you think that they have if they have a Th1 dominant problem, like a Hashimoto's, you want to support Th2. You want to bring the Th2 up. You don't want to support Th1 even more. And vice versa. These things will help them in balance. So these are generally safe for everybody. Probiotics, vitamin A, vitamin E, Boswellia, enzymes, and turmeric. Whereas if they say, oh my God, I've tried taking echinacea or I've tried taking those medicinal mushrooms, I can't, it just makes me way worse, then they may have a Th1 dominant. And then you look at this list, okay, let's see how you do on these guys. It may not be so clear. It may be that things in each list causes a problem, but you can even ask them, do any of these, have you ever taken any of these things and do they make you better or worse? So it helps you if you're trying to really get in there in a deep level. Then you look at the nutrients that protect, and we talk about more of that in there, foods that enhance the immune function. And again, if you haven't been through our micronutrient module, every single one of these is explained in great detail. There's a presentation on every nutrient that's, you know, anywhere from 40 minutes long to an hour and 15 minutes long. So you go into a lot of detail so you can review that if you're not sure. Foods that enhance the immune system, right? All of these things. Mushrooms, but if they are a Th1 dominant, mushrooms, they may say, oh, I can't eat mushrooms, they make me worse. Ah, you probably have a Th1 dominant problem, right? So those are the things. Some herbs, the forms that you can use with them, all different kinds, and it depends on them. I got into the mode of, like, for some people who had cortisol issues, high levels of cortisol at night and couldn't sleep, was recommending magnolia. And I said, oh, get the magnolia powder and just put it in and make a little tea before you go to bed. And he was like, I can't do that. That stuff tastes awful. So I bought it and tried it myself. Yeah, it tastes pretty bad. It makes your mouth feel all like, blah, tingly. And I could do it. And I, you know, I did it and I put a little bit of other stuff in there to mask it and it was fine. But if you've got people with sensitive taste, they're not going to like you very much if you give them something like that. So in that case, you give them either capsules or a tincture. And the tinctures usually just taste like alcohol. So there's all kinds of ways, right? Some people who have really impaired digestion, you want to give them things that are topical or that they're breathing in through steams. There's so many ways that you can do it. And ask these questions from people before you say, okay, I want you to start taking this and that and the other thing. Like, what forms do you like? How do you react? Really look at it and help them. I personally start with either liquids, topicals or liquids, then to powders, which they can make into it, and then to capsules, and then tablets are my very last choice. But there's times when I can only get something in a tablet that I'll do that with them. And here's some of the top immune supporting herbs. And we talk in here about immune supporting and immune stimulating. right? And we don't want to stimulate the immune system at certain times. So these things on this sheet are immune supportive. They balance the immune system. Echinacea, ginseng, ginkgo, reishi, chaga, astragalus, cat's claw. But these other things actually will boost the immune system. So if they have a low immunity and they're chronically getting colds and flus on their, in the, you know, the fourth week of a really bad something, sinus infection, when you see them, these are some of the ones that will actually boost the immune system. You got to be careful with these guys if they have an autoimmune condition, right? So it's all a matter of getting to know the herbs, getting to know the person, and then helping them and make a decision. So here we talk about it, immunostimulators and immunomodulators, right? What essential oils can be helpful, right? And it can be through breathing them in the air, rubbing them on their feet, you know, applying them under their nose or throat before they go to bed. And it can be just putting it in their water and having them drink them. The ones I use most for colds or flus are oregano, lemon, peppermint. But some people can't take peppermint. So you want to make sure that they don't have a hiatal hernia. Because if they have a hiatal hernia, they have a weakened lower esophageal sphincter, and peppermint can make it weaker. So it's a matter of learning this. We'll be doing our herbal therapeutics class in probably May. I haven't decided. Well, maybe not May, maybe June. Later spring. Probably June. So oregano. You can treat anything from colds and flus to warts. I mean, it's really a good herb, but it's hot. So you have to be careful of it. My son used to try to tease his friends and take my oregano oil and say, here, taste this. And he put it in water and have them drink it. And they don't burn my lips. So you have to be careful with this. Keep them out of the hands of children who like to play pranks on their friends. If you're going to apply it, you've definitely got to dilute it. If you're putting it in your mouth, got to be diluted. Best would be in a little bit of oil, like put some oregano in olive oil, put it on a salad and eat it that way, right? That's a really great way to take the oregano. And then there's resveratrol. You can't really get enough resveratrol from wine. You'd be drunk and hurting your liver to get enough of it from there. So it's got to be extracted and taking it, right? To achieve miracle results, between 750 and 1500 bottles of wine a day would be needed. That's really sad, right? So, you know, there's a lot of mixed reviews on it, but there are ways that you can use resveratrol. And then the immune enhancing diet. We talk about that. We've gone over this over and over again. Prescription for a healthy immune system. You've got to help them customize their diet, supplements, and herbs to the individual based on their environment, based on their diet, based on their genetics, based on their early childhood. Eat only the fuel designed for them. This is something you can give them. Only fuel designed for you. If gluten is not good for you, you don't eat it. If oregano is not good for you, you don't eat it. Tune it up regularly, right? You do all your good stuff, like your stress reduction stuff, your like fasting or some sort of a cleanse and detox on a regular basis. Get an oil change. You know what we mean by that, right? That chart of all the oils, and get rid of the crappy oils and put in the good oils. Plenty of rest, move a lot, and have fun, right? Let me talk about the mitochondria and how those work and how the sugar affects it and how we need the energy on a cellular level. So here's some of your resources that you have for being able to support that, and then some references. So that's it in a nutshell. That's the immune system. I'll share with you the assignment and the done for you resources and next steps, and then we'll open up to questions. I mean, I don't remember what all these assignments are, but most of them have, if it's there, it has an assignment probably. Yeah. So, So what's your instructions? Create and share a recipe that would help someone manage inflammation. Right? Maybe it's a ginger-related recipe with lots of vitamin C-rich foods and turmeric. Pay attention to the omega-6 and 3 ratios. Oops, there's a spelling error. You can use the spreadsheet provided in the Done For You resources to do this and include some of the anti-inflammatory foods and herbs. You can create an immune system balancing elixir. Here's a recipe that you can use as guideline, right? And I give you this, the chart and some recipes, and you can make your own, And then post it, and we'll give you an attachment link below. Where is that? I'm going to have somebody go through these because it looks like there's still some problems here with the attachment piece. So anyway, you can send it to us. You can just use, once you do that and you're ready for, you know, going for your certification, you can just go to
resources.
Thank you. Resources, file uploader, and you can just upload it there. Okay. That's what most people did. Okay. And then done for you. These are things you can take and use with your clients, some assessments, some charts, etc. There's a lot of stuff here, and we give it to you in PDF and DocX, like other stuff. So you can go in there and you can customize them. You just want to use this little statements at the bottom of them, but you've got vitamin C flush, zinc taste test, omega-6, you know, there's a lot of stuff in here that you can use to help your clients to optimize their immune systems. Next steps, that's where you take what you learned in this module and put it into action on either a client or a family member or yourself. And so you take the oxidative stress quiz, get somebody that you know to take it. If they have a high score, you can do this oxidative, that should be urine test if you can still get it. Create an immune boosting protocol, repeat the test, and share your results if you want to on one of our calls or on the Facebook group. It's really a good idea to have that accountability. So share it with somebody. And then you have your exam. And that's it for this module. It's a lot, right? There's a lot of information there. Let's see. And it's a 20 question. So it's actually an easy test. Just pay attention and you'll be able to do it. All right. That's all I have. Questions, comments. How was this for you? Was it a lot? Did it get you excited about doing this? Yes? Cool. Are you getting close to it, Susan? You've been going through a lot of them.
I just finished 14 and 15 on the adrenals.
So you're almost there. Mm-hmm.
Getting there.
It's a lot of work. But you know what? I was in school for years to learn this stuff, and I'm synthesizing it down to the salient points and the practical stuff, because I didn't get any of that when I was learning this. So enjoy it. Thank you. Who else? Questions, comments? Nothing?
I'm excited about that one. I've got a few more modules to go, and I'm still trying to catch up on client homework related assignments from previous posts. And I'm just now starting IRSBT. IRSBT.
Insulin resistant.
Yeah, I'm saying that right, aren't I?
That's right.
But it's kind of hard because I want to catch up on my client homework, but I also want to do IRSBT and finish the digestive one. But I also want to continue to move forward so I can keep on progressing into these because I'm nosy. I'm busy, you know.
Well, sure. And if you can handle two at a time, that's fine because, you know, you're learning one set of stuff and another set of stuff and it just well rounds you. So you're fine with doing it that way. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Who else? Comments, questions? Lynn, any words of wisdom having gone through all of these?
It is well worth it. I find the immune system is so foundational. It's right in there with the digestion. They just almost kind of go hand in glove. I made a remark in here. There have been a few times lately where I'm working with people with extremely compromised guts, like their bacteria's were very out of balance, and so I was actually working on their immune system before I even started on any of those more grand gut repair things.
It's interesting you say that because when we think about it, like foundational to getting the immune system, it's like this catch-22, and sometimes it's hard to know where to start, right? Because it's important for the immune system to have the gut in order, so we're not constantly assaulting it with the leaky gut and all these antigens coming in. But then it's sometimes important for the gut to calm it down to get the immune system under control. So sometimes you're having to work things, you can't necessarily work them in sequential order, and it's figuring out what's going to give you the most bang for your buck in working with somebody.
Well, and this is something I like to tell my clients, they are not a checklist. And it's not like, oh, I'm doing the gut program and I'm going to do check, 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 and then I'm done with it. You are never done. You know, it's like, oh, I see your immune system. And so we're going to do these pieces here with the immune system. And we're going to be kind of adding in some of these different gut repair things at the same time. And not everybody can handle, especially if they're working in these areas, they can't always handle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's just, I love it because it keeps me on my toes. It's never boring.
It's never boring. It's not a protocol. Here, give them this drug for this disease, right? Next box, here's the person, put them in the box, add the drug, send on, give me the next one. And that's what the fallacy of Western medicine is, and why it's not getting the results, is because we're just trying to put people in boxes and we can't. But a lot of the foundational pieces, right? Here's how I feel about it. I don't think you can heal the gut if they're not sleeping, they're eating crap, they're stressed out. You can't. But on the other hand, they could do all those things and still have to work harder to heal the gut. So like, what else? What are some of those other things that are going in there? Sometimes it's an emotional thing, you know, some early trauma that gets in the way. Sometimes it's self-sabotage, that they know what they should do, but they can't. And we've been doing a lot of that on the Facebook group. I'm doing some work on self-sabotage. And Laura Fine chimed in on my comments yesterday, is that I talked a lot about the perfectionism. And how many here have that perfectionism streak, right? Right? And how is that hurting your health? But how is it hurting you as moving forward in your practice, right? I did that for years. I was like, oh, but I have to learn this and I have to learn that. Oh, I'm going to go for a homeopathy degree now. Now I'm going to go for my Chinese medicine degree. And now I'm going to go for, right? And then it's like, I finally had to sit myself down and say, you know enough, just get out there and use what you know. And if you feel like you need to learn more, you can learn more as you're going. But how many people could you be helping right now with what you know? I say a lot, yeah. Right? So help the people who are you two or three steps ahead of, and don't worry about the rest. Refer the rest to somebody who's further along, who can handle it. Or sometimes when you think you can't help them because you haven't quite gotten there and you start to study, you learn, you can, right? So it's like really, and being fair to them, not stringing them along for 6 months trying to figure it out, but trying to figure it out or working in conjunction with somebody who's a few steps ahead. But there's so many people that you can help with where you're at. So going back to the perfectionist thing, Laura wrote in that a lot of us are preconditioned to that early in childhood, right? From the, you always got, oh yeah, you did well, you got an A and you got all this accolade. And if you didn't, you didn't get any praise. So we strove to be perfect, right? My mother, when I was a freshman in high school, I went from being like this 98 in everything I ever did, A pluses in everything. And my first semester in high school, my average was 92. And I was like, wow, I guess high school's harder than grammar school, was my response. And my mother was, why is it only a 92? Why did you only get a 92? And I'm like, why did I only get a 92? What's wrong with me? I've got to work harder. And I ended up bringing it up, working really hard, valedictorian. But I'm always, I took with that, you're not enough. You're not good enough. Work harder and harder and harder to be good enough. So I strove for that perfectionism in my schoolwork. And when I got to college, it was another story. I went to NYU. Like, there's a lot of really brainy people that go to NYU. I still was in the top like 5% of my class when I graduated, but I kind of gave up on the idea that I was going to be valedictorian pretty early on. It's like, oh, there's no way I'm striving for that. It's too much work, right? but I still did well enough. Went on, you know, postgraduate, got a master's degree in computers. I don't even know what my grades were. I didn't care. I was working in a full-time job. I was doing this to learn more, and I just made it through, got my master's in computer science. I was able to let go of some of that perfectionism, right? And so, but still, it comes out all the time. Like, I'm going, oh my God, there was a typo on that page. You know, I want it to be perfect, but you know what? How many times have you picked up a book that's been in print for decades and found a typo, right? It's virtually impossible to find every typo. We had a book, I think it was our dessert book. We had at least three or four people. I went through it. Karen went through it. A couple of other people went through it. And then we gave it to the husband of one of the people who went through it with us. And she's a school teacher and he's a school teacher. She gave it to him. He found like pages and pages of additional typos that none of us had. Like, we can't be perfect, right? And our eyes gloss over things. So, you know enough wherever you are to be able to help these folks. You know enough, like what was it that it was Lynn at the beginning, Lynn Rose, who said somebody she knows went to the doctor and told her that, oh, your A1C is fine, it's 9. How many of you are thinking A1C of 9, wherever you are in your studies, is like, no, right? So we just have to be out there helping these people who are not getting the help from the medical establishment. We have to be able to help them, and we can. So just help them. Don't worry about being perfect yet. I mean, I sit there and, I'll go to lectures and I'm like, I didn't know all that stuff. That's cool. Now I know. Right? I learn more and more, and we all learn more every day. All right? So go through the module, go through all your modules, just, make a plan. Every week you're going to tackle whatever number of hours you have available to do it. May take you longer for some modules than others if it's more in-depth and more detailed. Some of them you might go quicker through because you've had more experience with it. But the point is to get through and to learn this. And when you come for certification and you pass your test, we're not here to go, you didn't do a good enough job. We're here to say, okay, here's where you are. Here's where I'd like you to be before you get certified. Here's what you can do to get there. And you go off and you do it, right? We're not criticizing. We're not putting you down. We just want to turn out the best practitioners we can. And that's why we have a lot of hoops to jump through. It might take you 2 years. It might take you 4 years. It might take you a year. It all depends on you, your life, your factors that you have, whether you have a full-time job or not. All of those things factor in. But we want to turn out the best practitioners we can. We want to be known as the Harvard, the Ivy League of online health coaching courses. And I think we are. And I went through that and I had forgotten quite how much depth we had in there. And I'm like, whoa, this is pretty good stuff, right? This is good stuff. And no, I'm not perfect. I might have misspoke something or said ums and ahs a little bit in those presentations. But you know what? You're learning. And you'll forgive me for not being perfect, right? My teachers, when I went through school and I got my degrees, they weren't perfect either. They made a lot of mistakes. And when I caught them on those mistakes, or some of it wasn't mistakes, it was misinformation. Like PKU, who remembers what PKU is or knows? Phenylketonuria. Anybody know what that is? It's a disease where there's an imbalance in an enzyme. It's genetically coded that you cannot break down phenylalanine, the amino acid, and it builds up. And it ends up causing problems and mental retardation and problems. And it's a problem in kids, not a common problem, but it usually manifests when they're very young. And so they put them on very low phenylalanine diets. So those are people that don't let them give them aspartame aspartame that's phenylalanine. One of those artificial sweeteners has phenylalanine in it. So my teacher's teaching this and we're going through this, and my pediatrics is in my master's degree. And he says, really, honestly, the best food for these PKU kids is soft drinks and candy. That was what I did. I went, what? I just like threw my head on the desk and went, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. And he's like, what? I said, yeah, it's low in peaking. It's low in phenylalanine, but what about everything else? How do we design a diet for these kids that's balanced, that's healthy, that supports their immune system? And he said the same thing about after a beautiful lecture, the biochemistry of breast milk. And it was the best lecture I'd ever heard. I really got, oh my God, I'm thinking, oh my God, everybody has to, you know, get access to this stuff. This stuff is like liquid gold, right? And at the end of it, he says, and there's no evidence that breastfeeding is any better for babies than formula feeding. And I did the same thing. And he goes, what? I said, he said, that's the gold standard. I said, how could you say that? He said, well, it's the gold standard. How is that measured? He says, well, height-weight ratio, their rate of growth. And actually, formula-fed babies grow faster. I'm like, yeah, they do, because they have all that hormone from the from a cow, which is supposed to double its weight in 6 months. And I'm arguing with this guy who's my PhD professor. Lucky I didn't fail the class. I said, he said, well, it's the gold standard. I said, well, why don't they measure brain development? Why don't they measure immune system function? And he goes, well, that's the gold standard. I said, did it ever occur to you to question the gold standard? I said that to his face. He was like punk graduate student saying that to his face. And he just went, you know, he just threw up his hands because he didn't know what to say to me, right? Medicine is loaded with myths like that, with stupid conversations like that, because they don't get it. They don't look at the big picture. They're like the blind men and the elephant. They're looking at this piece or this piece or this piece or this piece, and they don't put it all together. We get to put it all together. Make sense? And you're wherever you are in your studies, whether you're partial the way through, whether you're halfway through, whether you're almost done, you get to be the elite practitioners out there who are putting it together and helping people and saving people from the misinformation that they're getting from the medical system and from the drug companies or the drug company driven medical system. So I don't want to be a cynic. I don't want to put anybody down, but this is what I know to be true. So you guys are good. You guys know more about how to help people get healthy than most doctors out there. It's true. You already know wherever you are. You already know. Barbara, the stuff you've done for your own health in the last year, like you already know more than most doctors, because none of your doctors were able to get you the results you got.
No, absolutely not. And I'm getting braver and I'm talking to folks. I just bought a whole house water filter. And the salesperson, she was supposed to be out on leave for a surgery. I don't know what the surgery is, but come to find out through our conversations, she is type 2 diabetic and they canceled the surgery because her liver enzymes were too high. And I knew what those were just from my own lab tests. But she's like, I've got to talk to you. I started telling her about what's happened with my A1C. And she said, I don't know how to do it. You know, and so I need this unit. Is can you bump around when you see when you like, I mean,
yeah,
I think that would
reach out, you know. I don't know who, Lynn used to do it for everybody. Who's doing it? Let us know that you want to be bumped up and we'll open it up to you. Just write to MEPP at dradamarie.com and one of us will open it up.
Okay. All right. Because a lot of what that's calling for to help is some of the things I'm getting ready to implement anyway for my gut. Mm-hmm. So that's the beauty. That's the excitement and the encouragement that whatever you do right is going to help something else.
Absolutely. And you, what you can do is you already have access to that shield. No, you don't, because you're a year one person. No, you are, because you're ERC. Yeah. So you already have access to the shield, the immune system. So if you're looking at a module that we go through here and you're not up to it, do the consumer version of that first. A lot of the stuff's in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I have not looked at that one.
Yeah, go look at that one and get you started. And that'll help you when you dig in here, because you know repetition helps. And then
when
you have repetition and it's this level and then you go deeper and deeper and deeper.
That's why a lot of the slides made sense, even though I've not started any of the modules yet. So that's exciting to see that connection. I'm not going to be totally in the dark. I'm going to have bits and pieces of understanding. And I'll share, I did my yogurt class yesterday.
Ah.
So we made one, almond, and cashew. We did four different nuts, and then I did a yogurt bar and taught them about, you know, some of them overdropped with the stevia drops with the flavorings and those kinds of things. So they're learning a whole lot of different things. It was fun. It was really fun. So and we're just kind of creating it as we go.
Creating it as you go. So I'm going to use Barbara as an example, right? Barbara's been in NEPT for what, 6 months now? Joined in September, so maybe not even 6 months. And she's been working on her own health, and she joined ERC in what, September. And she's taken that. She goes, I know more than these people about this. I can teach them about what I already know. So what is it that you already know that you feel comfortable with? Do a little class. Classes are a great way to get clients. You do the class and then you say, hey, if anybody wants to work with me one-on-one with this to help you balance your microbiome or whatever it might be, and talk about some of the stuff you know related to the medical conditions. You know, microbiome is super important. These yogurts are going to help you balance it because if you have an autoimmune disease, blah, blah, blah. Well, somebody may be sitting there going, autoimmune, I have an autoimmune disease. You know, and if you want to come talk to me afterwards, I can share with you how I can support you in that.
And she's also really active in Instagram. She, you know, I know you've seen her stuff on Facebook. Well, she does the same thing with Instagram as well as her little videos. And, nice. You know, she's just living her life and showing people what can be done. And it's just, they're just gravitating towards her.
That's awesome. That's awesome. One day I should learn how to open my Instagram account and get in there because I don't have any idea how to even look at Instagram. I have somebody who posts things from Facebook to Instagram for me. I have no idea how to do it.
Well, I like them. I like your Instagram posts, whoever does them.
You like and mine? Okay,
good. I also have, I do have the form. So if nobody is getting a response to open a module, I can still do that.
Okay, good. Thank you. I think. Yeah, no, I mean, the same.
But I mean, I, you know.
But I would say go through the, if there's a module that you want open, go through the client module first. And most of them are there. There's 12 client health modules. You know, yeah, we have 36 for you guys or more now, but 12. So there's gut, blood sugar, adrenal, thyroid, what's the fifth one? Detox and liver, I guess, environment. There's reproduction, there's immune. I'm trying to think of the other ones because I have to teach these every month in elite ERC.
Brain.
What's that? There's
brain.
Brain. Yeah, we did brain last month. There's musculoskeletal, there's respiratory, there's energy medicine and cardiovascular. So there's 12 of those. So just go through them. Whatever order you want to go through them.
What do you mean when you talk about client modules?
Right. So
you have a link to the Unstoppable Health site. Mm-hmm. When you log into the Unstoppable Health site and the front page, you will see those modules listed there.
Okay.
And you have access to them to go through them.
I guess I haven't seen those yet.
Yeah. And once a month, if any of you want to come to them, we are doing for the elite folks, the people who are the second year, third year, whatever of ERC, we're doing a little talk. Every month I'm doing one of the advanced modules. So last month I did brain. I think this month I'm doing reproduction. So, you know, you're welcome to come to those. If you want to, just send us an email and we'll get somebody to add you to the list. We don't want to bombard you. No, actually you'll see it on the schedule. It'll be on the schedule and you guys should see it and you can just click the link and come to it.
They're posted on the schedule, but I hadn't seen a Zoom link to it. So I was wondering how we could get into those.
Oh, there's no Zoom link on the new schedule? Like they're on the new schedule that we put together that's at a glance. Let me go look at that.
Or maybe they were just put there for the ERC elite people.
I don't know. The way she set up this new page was to set it up so that everything showed all in one place because we're going to phase out some of the individual ones. So everybody can, let me look. So it's just hidden as code in the background. So if you don't have access, but NEPT has access to all of it. So let me go here. ERC. Calls and recordings. So you'll notice that the NEPT calls are on that same, here, let me share my screen. Okay, if I can make it back, share. Okay, what time is it? Okay, I'm good. Oh no, I'm not good, I have to go. How did it get so late? So this is basically it. So if I look at ERC Elite, module 2, access, it's right there.
Okay.
Okay, so here's the link and I gotta go. Stop share and chat. Okay, and where's the chat? There you go. Okay, that's the list and all of them should be listed there. So you're welcome to come to any of those you want to. Okay, and if that link is not accessible to you, if you're not seeing the link, if you're not seeing that call, let us know because it's just a mistake on the page. But thank you guys for being here. Had a great time. I hope this was helpful and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome. Bye. Bye-bye.